This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Yeah, the front runner is quite clear. That is Ahmadou Ba, the presidential candidate for the ruling APRC party and the coalition of, Beru Siyasa. And of course, the opposition coalition, party of Mr. Sonko Basiru Diomaye Faye.
That is reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar previewing Sunday's presidential election in Senegal. Details coming up. Also, Niger says 23 of its soldiers were killed in a terrorist ambush. And 2.7 million people in Zimbabwe are facing food insecurity. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. After much uncertainty in Senegal following President Macky Sall's unsuccessful effort to delay the vote, which sparked violent protests, the presidential election is scheduled for Sunday. Here is reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar with a preview of what to expect election day.
Yes, it's very interesting. In the last couple of days, things have been shaping very well. The 19th presidential, candidate whose candidacy has been confirmed by the Constitutional Council, where all crisscrossing the country, selling their programs. And but what we have just seen that, and also there are a few incidents of violence, apart from some reported isolated cases of sectorial violence between the ruling APR and the coalition Benno Bokuyakar government, which is, the government, the candidate of President Macky Sall, and also the opposition coalition, Mr. Ousmane Sonko's, candidate, Basiru Diomaye Faye. So apart from that, it is very peaceful, and we are expecting that more more electric today in Dakar, because most of the candidates are finishing their rallies in Dakar, so they are holding different rallies in Dakar from different, places. Okay.
So, Alpha, one of the most interesting things about this election is opposition leader Ousmane Sonko being released from prison last week. It has triggered jubilant celebrations on the streets of Dakar. Any word from Mr. Sonko?
Yes, he's been saying a lot of things. He was released from jail. He didn't go to his house. He spent a night in a hotel. And the following day, he hit the campaign trail with his, presidential candidate, Basiru Faye. But, when they got into the interior of the country, they separated. Ousmane Sonko also got a rousing, welcome in his native town of Sikansor, where he...
You just mentioned there are 19 candidates in the race, the highest number in Senegal's history. Who are the front runners in the race?
Yeah, the front runner is quite clear. That is Ahmadou Ba, the presidential candidate for the ruling APRC party and the coalition of, Benno Bokuyakar. And of course, the opposition coalition, party of Mr. Sonko Basiru Diomaye Faye. They are the front runner. However, there are other candidates, people like Idrissa Seck, Mr. Idrissa Seck, once served as prime minister under Ablaye Wade. And he also, held senior government position during President Macky Sall. We also have Mr. Khalifa Sallah. Khalifa Sallah is also a seasoned politician. And other important twist in this presidential election is that two other candidates decided to withdraw their candidacy and support the opposition ruling coalition. That is Mr. Abissi and Mr. Seth Jan Jay.
Is there a runoff between leading candidates? Is it expected?
Yes, according to some analysts from, electoral experts, they said that if you just take, this is the highest, as you said, this is the highest number of, candidates in Senegal's election for the first time. They said that likely there would be, a runoff.
And lastly, Alpha, despite the violent upheavals in recent months, according to analysts, unemployment is the chief concern for a majority of young Senegalese. So have the candidates actually talked about breaking the cycle of poverty in Senegal?
Yes, exactly. I think this is their campaign. Most of the candidates were just using that as a campaign slogan. I mean, providing youth, especially, I mean, Mr. Sonko and his presidential, his candidate, Jomai Fai. So they also talk about increasing the health, you know, sector and also trying to improve the quality of lives of rural women.
That was reporter Alpha Jallo talking to me from Dakar. A recent study by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies showed that the proliferation of disinformation is a fundamental challenge to stable and prosperous African societies. It also showed that the scope of these intentional efforts to distort the information environment for a political end is accelerating, with 189 documented disinformation campaigns in Africa last year, nearly quadruple the number reported in 2022. Joseph Siegel, director of research at the center, discussed the findings of the study with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
Well, the major actors are Russia, China, and the Gulf states. In that order, approximately 60% of all of the documented campaigns we've identified are foreign-sponsored. And they do this because it's an inexpensive but powerful asymmetric tool for gaining influence. By shaping narratives about what's happening on the ground, this influences how publics interpret events. And then this has direct implications for governance norms and policies. And you know, many of these campaigns are aimed at propping up military juntas or authoritarian governments with whom these foreign actors have allegiances. And this enables them to assert more influence.
Why the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia would use disinformation campaigns in Africa?
We're seeing a growing interest in competition by Gulf actors, primarily the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, for influence in Africa, especially Northeast Africa. And this regional rivalry is playing out as a means to control and gain influence with leaders, usually unaccountable leaders in specific African countries. We're seeing this heat up in Sudan. This has been the dynamic in Libya, other parts of North Africa. We're seeing it in other parts of the Horn of Africa as well. And so there's a governance element to it that by co-opting, gaining control of these leaders, it expands the influence for these countries that have aspirations to be the regional power broker. It's also part of an economic strategy to control trade and ports and throughout the Red Sea region and broader Northeast Africa, and in that place, expand and maintain control over these economic linkages that can be ongoing revenue streams for these countries.
So how about the domestic disinformation in Africa?
Well, we are also seeing a growth in domestic disinformation, and they tend to borrow the tactics that we are seeing from the foreign actors. I believe the top domestic actors involved in disinformation are the military juntas, especially in the Sahel, and they are using disinformation to try to demonstrate and project popularity, even though they lack legitimacy. And they are using disinformation to try to scapegoat their country's problems on other causes, whether it be France or the West or the United Nations or ECOWAS or democracy. So the disinformation serves as a distraction from the increasingly repressive tactics that they're employing domestically, as well as the deteriorating economic and security conditions.
For the rival governments in Libya, how disinformation was used to shape up the public opinion?
What we're seeing in Libya is that a lot of the disinformation is associated with the warlord, Khalifa Haftar, who is supported by the Russians. And disinformation is aimed at trying to undermine popular support for the UN-backed national unity government in Tripoli. It's intended to create negative attitudes towards the UN, who is trying to broker some sort of peaceful way forward in the country. And it's trying to amplify and promote a more popular image for Khalifa Haftar and his allies in the country.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA's Mohamed Al-Shenawi. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says a major Israeli ground assault on Rafah would be a mistake and unnecessary to defeating Hamas in Gaza. Blinken and his Egyptian counterpart Sami Shoukry held a joint news conference after a meeting in Cairo with foreign ministers of Jordan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. He said that while dealing with Hamas is necessary, an attack on Rafah is not. Blinken also focused on children's situation, particularly the growing hunger crisis. Blinken was in Egypt for talks focused on efforts to secure a ceasefire in the Israeli-Hamas war, the release of hostages held in Gaza, and more humanitarian aid into Gaza to help Palestinian civilians who are badly in need of assistance. Blinken discussed the potential halt in fighting lasting at least 6 weeks, as he met earlier with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. Multiple countries have been involved in weeks of talks trying to come up with a proposal acceptable to both Israel and Hamas. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The World Health Organization says the health situation is worsening in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where cholera, measles, mpox, anthrax, and plague are wreaking havoc. The WHO said the crisis is being exacerbated by violence, climate shocks, displacement, poverty, and malnutrition, as it's called for an urgent funding surge. A press statement by the WHO representative in the DRC says, in many parts of the country, particularly in eastern DRC, civilians are caught in renewed fighting and hospitals are overwhelmed with casualties. The French news agency reports that the DRC is facing its worst cholera outbreak since 2017, with 50,000 suspected cases and 470 deaths recorded in 2023. It is also battling the largest epidemic of measles since 2019, which close to 28,000 cases and 750 deaths so far in 2024. And an outbreak of mpox, formerly known as monkeypox, is on the rise with nearly 4,000 suspected cases and 271 deaths so far this year. More than two-thirds of the cases are being reported in children. In Kenya, Lake Naivasha is world famous for its lumbering hippos and majestic African eagles, while providing water to local communities and large fresh produce and cut flower farms. This is why several non-profit groups, the government and local communities are working together to address pollution in the freshwater lake. For World Water Day, Ruben Chama reports from Kenya's Rift Valley town of Naivasha.
Other community members who are not RUA members, and we shall inform them about the status of the river. If it is not good, we are going to tell them, you can plant maybe a grass here, you can plant a tree. At the end of the day, our water will be good, it will be good for us.
That's John Thuita, a 54-year-old farmer from Tumaini area in Kenya's Nyandarua County, showing a group of farmers gathered by a small stream how to assess water quality. Thuita is the group leader of the area Water Resources Users Association in communities of mainly smallholder farmers across the Lake Naivasha Basin catchment, people have been trained to test the water and report results to the authorities for needed intervention. Thuita explains.
I am in this citizen science, which was started by Lake Naivasha region, and we have been taught how to know the health of our rivers. We have started it, and we have done it for almost 2 years now, and we have already written our scorecard. After noticing how the pollution goes, we have at least more than two problems that we have tackled.
Susan Muthoni is a technical officer at Lake Naivasha Basin Umbrella Water Resource Users Association.
Those are community members, the smallest unit in water resource management in the country as per the water sector reforms. They are in the sub-catchments. They monitor the water resource in terms of the use, in terms of the water quality. And that's where we have the river health assessment. It's a citizen red process where the communities are protecting and safeguarding the water resource in terms of water quality and community perception of their catchment.
Friday is World Water Day, and the United Nations theme for this year is Water for Peace, focusing on the critical role water plays in the stability and prosperity of the world. In addition to providing water for smallholder farmers, Lake Naivasha also has been designated a wetland of international importance under the Ramsar Convention, an international treaty on protecting wetlands. And the wider catchment is a significant growing area for food sold in Britain. Harriet Lamp is the chief executive officer at RAP, an international non-governmental organization working to tackle the climate crisis and ensure a sustainable future. She says our organization, working with the World Wide Fund for Nature, several British retailers and fresh produce and cut flower companies, puts Lake Naivasha IHUP the priority list for collective action projects.
That's absolutely why work in Kenya was one of the top priorities for us, to address the needs to make at a catchment level the water sustainable for everybody, obviously for people living here, for nature, and for the economy. And of course, the flower sector, the export of vegetables are generating badly needed jobs here in the Lake Naivasha Basin.
The initiative aims to build more sustainable water management, bringing together the Kenyan Water Resource Authority, RAP, the WWF, the Lake Naivasha Basin Umbrella Water Resource Users Association, and the Flower Farms Association. When water is scarce or polluted, or when people have unequal or no access, tensions can rise among communities and countries. Water conservation organizations say as climate change increases and the global population grows, communities should unite around protecting water supplies. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Naivasha, Kenya.
The World Food Programme, WFP, says Zimbabwe is at the peak of its lean season, with 2.7 million people across the country facing food insecurity even before effects of an ongoing drought kick in. Columbus Mavunga reports from Mangwe, one of the most affected districts.
In southwestern Zimbabwe, crops in the Mangwe area have withered away. Even local farmers will be among Zimbabweans who need aid until next year. That includes 42-year-old Singazi Sibanda, a mother of three children. Sibanda says, "All my crops were burnt by sun and died at early stages. I don't know how we'll get to next year and where we will be." Mangwe is one of the districts in Zimbabwe most affected by drought. Local officials say some people may have to go work in nearby Botswana or in urban areas to survive. Joseph Nile oversees Mabande's village of Mangwe for the Ministry of Local Government. He says holes have no water, dams are drying up, there's no grazing land, there's no grazing grass for animals. Maybe some hay will be brought from other areas to feed the local animals. Food is being distributed in hard-hit areas. Evelyn Ndlovu is the minister of Matabeleland South, also in the Mangwe area. She says the government is in touch with international aid agencies to get more help. Officials say the crisis is growing worse in the region due to recurring droughts caused by the El Nino weather pattern. Francesca Edelman is the World Food Programme's Zimbabwe director.
The crop situation in Zimbabwe is very poor at the moment, and we expect that the number of people who will not have adequate stock from their own production to last them until the next harvest, which would be then by the middle of next year, that number of people who will not be able to meet their food needs over that full period will go up.
Zimbabwe's government says the 2024 grain harvest will yield about 868,000 tons of grain, an alarming 62% drop from last year's total, and far below the target that officials had set for this year. Aid groups say they are stepping up efforts to help. Janine Davis, head of the U.S. Agency for International Development in Zimbabwe, says USAID is providing funds to WFP to help people get through the lean season.
We're focusing on this January to March period, which we have identified is the peak of the lean season. It's the most critical period. But as you're mentioning, it's also important for us to provide additional opportunities so that even throughout the year, people have options and means to support their families and households.
A message that brings some hope to people like Sibanda. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe's information minister says the country is working to ease food insecurity by waiving taxes on the importation of rice, maize, potato seed, cooking oil, and genetically modified maize for stock feed in a bid to lower prices for average Zimbabweans. Kwalamba Zimavunga, VOA News, Mangwe, Zimbabwe.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
Niger says 23 of its soldiers were killed in a terrorist ambush near the borders with Burkina Faso and Mali in a western region prone to extremist attacks. The defense ministry says the latest attack came during a security sweep in Talibere in the border area on Tuesday and Wednesday. It says about 100 terrorists attacked the army unit with homemade bombs and suicide vehicles. 23 soldiers died in the fighting and 17 were wounded. According to the French news agency AFP, authorities say about 30 terrorists were neutralized.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Patrick Deya, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.